Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com.
A production of Serotech Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Jamie Pauls.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 91 for January 9th, 2012. I'm Jamie Pauls.
I'm Ricky Inger.
I'm Justin Kim.
Start out by wishing everyone a happy new year. I trust that everyone had a great holiday. Ricky and Joe, did you guys eat perhaps more than you normally would?
Oh, yes. We actually had kind of an interesting adventure. We bought a fried turkey this time rather than making it ourselves. And it was nice to spend the holiday eating instead of cooking. It was quite good.
I had that holiday where there was tons and tons of snacky things. So there was olives and pickles and, you know, this tray and that tray. And every time I turned around, it was like, oh, look, another tray full of stuff that I must go over and graze.
I shall know this.
Yeah, but I'm doing really good not to, because I'm absolutely afraid of doing that while I'm on vacation. In fact, next week, Lisa's going to pinch hint for me while I am actually away. And so I will be thinking of you guys while I'm in international waters. But that's where I'm afraid that I'm going to do most of my eating, is on a big ship.
You will. That's what I'm doing. My wife and I took a cruise last February, and it is a blast. And there is plenty of food to partake of on said cruise.
Yes. Now, I did look to make sure that there was exercise equipment. There's actually a ropes course, believe it or not, on this boat. That's one of their advertising things is, you know, come on board and exercise. And I was like, you know, New Year's resolution solved. Hooray.
There you go.
Maybe the only week I exercise. But, you know, we're interested to see what your New Year's resolutions are, too. So send us a line. Drop us an iReport or send us a line over at resources@serotalk.com and tell us what you plan for the new year.
And we here at Serotech started off the new year really well. On January the 2nd, we had audio description of the Tournament of Roses Parade, courtesy of the Los Angeles Radio Reading Service. I'd like to thank those great people for allowing us to rebroadcast that content on SamNet Radio, and thank our listeners for tuning into that. The archive of that is actually available on the front page of iBlink. Also, if you're in the System Access Network, you can find that in the special features area. So go check that out.
This was a really nice experience. I had never had a parade described to me. Even if I was watching a parade with other people, I was just kind of paying attention to the marching bands playing and things like that. But nobody was ever saying, and now this painted wagon is going by that has this, that, or the other. So it was very novel, and it was neat.
Yeah, I agree, actually. It really was. We do have some tech news, actually, to start out with. Ariadne GPS and iBlink Radio were inducted into the AppleViz Hall of Fame. We talked about that on our last live podcast. And thank you, by the way, for the comments on podcast 90, which were interviews that many of you really enjoyed. I certainly enjoyed doing them. And thank Patrick for pinch hitting for me as far as doing the hosting duties. But iBlink Radio was, in fact, one of the two apps, along with Ariadne, that were inducted into the AppleViz Hall of Fame the first time, the first inductees. And so thank you for nominating us.
And speaking of nominations, the nominations for the annual Blind Bargains Access Awards have opened now. So you'll be able to nominate your favorite things in your favorite categories. And by the way, I believe that podcasts are a category in this event. So if you love us, and we know you do, submit your nomination for that and all of the other fun stuff that you enjoy.
And our first Serospective of the year was this year in AT for 2011. I was a part of that. Joe Steinkamp was a part of that panel. And JJ Mehta of Blind Bargains was also a part of that discussion. It was rather a lengthy discussion, but you know what? You can't hardly cover an entire year's worth of AT news without taking some time to do it justice. And we did last night. Had some great participants in the chat room with us. Thank you all for joining live. And by the time you hear this podcast, you should be able to as well listen to the audio archive of that Saraspective. Well, in more AT news, there was a status update for the Orion announcement, and that's the Android-based note taker from Levelstar and APH that has been talked about for several months and highly anticipated, highly discussed as well. And apparently Levelstar is going to invest all of their energies into the APH version, the American Printing House version of this product, which is the Braille Plus, and that's going to be an 18, and second gen will include all of the features and the benefits of the Orion. They're shooting for the first quarter of 2012. And Joe, I know you have some thoughts about that. Do you want to go ahead and talk about maybe your concerns possibly?
I think that we will learn a lot more at ATIA when you and I go there to provide coverage. Ha ha ha. Right. Quick plug.
Absolutely.
Saratalk will be covering ATIA as well as CSUN as well as the summer conventions. And I'm looking forward to sitting down and interviewing those guys about that. JJ was the one who had a lot more comments about this. So if you go back to this year in AT, he had some comments about Android. The question that's kind of out there that I'm interested in is this a modded version of Android? And if so, does that allow you to still be able to get to some of the Google approved apps? There's when you do mods in Android, you can break off and write Android to be your own in the technical term that's called forking, F-O-R-K-I-N-G. And what happens is if you decide to fork away from the main branch of Android, Google says, okay, you can't get to Gmail, you can't get to all these other things unless you follow the strict guidelines that we have set out. So does that mean that does this unit have its own version of Android? Does it have its own version of Gmail? Well, mail program, not Gmail. Can it sync to Gmail? And so on and so on and so forth. Or is this a true version of Android and we have accessible versions of those Google apps? It's going to be very interesting to see what's going forward because they're still in beta and they can't really talk about it yet. Neither can anybody in the beta program. So we'll have to see what happens when they get to be more of a public situation by the time we get to ATIA.
If you'd like to follow the development of the Orion a little more closely, you can subscribe to an announce list. And if you're familiar with free lists, it's pretty typical. It's orion-announce-request@freelists.org with the word subscribe in the subject line. Well, not to be outdone by Orion, GW Micro had some news of its own toward the end of 2011, the beginning of 2012. And that is something called GW Skype. Now, in the interest of full disclosure, I am a private beta tester for WindowEyes, and so have been playing with that for a while and was kind of interested to see the reaction that people would have to it. GW Skype is a standalone interface for Skype, so you don't actually load the native Skype client. In fact, you cannot do that. You need to unload it. But GW Skype is a very lightweight, small footprint way to access Skype in a very accessible manner, very easy to use manner. And I find that it works quite nicely. I like it a lot. It actually works with all screen readers. You don't have to have WindowEyes. However, and here's where things get a little bit interesting. If you do not own WindowEyes, then every 30 minutes or so, you get a little reminder that you might want to consider the GW Micro product. That's okay if you're using a screen reader that allows you to quickly silence that ad if you're in the middle of something. And GW Skype is supposed to work and speak through the voice of whatever screen reader you're using. There are a couple of screen readers right now that is not working correctly, so you get sappy speech.
Right. And System Access is among those. But
yes, it is.
They do intend to have a release that fixes those issues. I have to say, I really like the program. I think it's a nice, elegant little interface to use Skype. The biggest thing that sparked controversy, though, was the fact that there were ads in the product for those who didn't own Window Eyes. The reactions were very mixed. I mean, they ranged from people saying, we'd like a way to opt out of this, not through buying Window Eyes, but through buying a paid version of the program. And then there were people who were simply just incensed that a company even had the audacity to advertise in a way that couldn't really be ignored. How dare you advertise to me, sort of thing. And that was the reaction that I found so strange, because advertising is everywhere. The issue is that we don't often see it as blind people, because it's either completely visual or it's inaccessible. But the sighted population is inundated with this stuff. And I think that we as a community need to be more accustomed to that too, and understand that companies are here to make money, and advertising is a part of that.
You know, I think RS Games has a really interesting way of doing this. If you're playing a game, you will hear audio ads. And if you're interested in one of them, you can press Control W to have that ad email to your account. And I actually did that not too long ago. I was interested in something that came across, and I did want to know more. And I actually did do that. So I personally don't have a problem with it. Obviously, like anyone else, I don't want to be inundated with tons of advertising. But I think this is something that's here to stay. I personally think it's a trend that we're going to see more of, and I think we shouldn't expect otherwise, personally. Continuing in AT News, Jaws 13 scripts for Station Playlist Studio by Brian Hartgen have been updated. One of the reasons I felt this article needed to be included, or this announcement, besides the fact that it's just of interest to Station Playlist users, is the fact that we talked several podcasts ago about the fact that Jaws 13 is not just one of those updates that you can kind of just keep using scripts as is, maybe recompile if you need to, but this was actually an update that changed what used to be the verbosity settings with insert V and turned it into the quick access center, I believe is what that is called now. And that actually required script writers to make some modifications to their scripts. So they didn't just, you know, rebound from this update quite as quickly and adapt to it as perhaps in other updates. So Jaws users may find that some of those scripts that they rely on actually have taken quite a little bit more time to actually come into Jaws 13. But I think Brian Hartgen is one of those really well-known script writers who does excellent quality work, and I think anyone who uses Station Playlist Studio will be pleased to be able to use those scripts once again in Jaws 13 to their full potential.
For all you gamers out there, Stem Stumper version 1.8 has been released, and I believe there are some new puzzles in that as well.
Bonus puzzles!
If you haven't gotten Stem Stumper yet, it is available for both Android and iOS devices, and it comes highly recommended.
I actually played with this over the holiday season. My original save got eaten, so I have to replay the game, shucky darn, over again to be able to get to the two new bonus puzzles, because you have to have a certain number of carrots in order to unlock that area. And I'm enjoying replaying the game to be able to get to the bonus content. Also, as an update, King's Corner did a update shortly after our live podcast that actually took care of the issue that I had talked about, in which there was an issue where I had felt like Red 6 was hard to understand, or Red Jack was hard to understand. Now it's back to having the ability to go in and set the way you want it. So it'll either read the suits, or it will do it the new way and just read colors. And I really appreciate that. Those guys turned around and did that super quick, like literally like the day after our podcast was released. So that outdated that really quickly. And the Netflix, we got a question in about my comments about Netflix from Podcast 89. And we talked about this a little bit on This Year in AT, is that there's fragmentation in iOS. So what I was seeing were issues that were specifically related to the iPad version of Netflix, because as I was talking to people on Twitter, they weren't seeing some of the same problems that I was running into, but they were using iPhones. So that is really interesting because the Netflix thing, and I've demonstrated it to Ricky and Jamie, actually I demonstrated it the day we recorded, the iPad version is having its own specific accessibility issues with VoiceOver that people on iPhones aren't running into. So just to give you guys an idea again of what that is that the iPad is displaying tiles of movies, and the tiles of movies don't have any text under them nor any way to communicate what those titles are. And the touch layer is not allowing me to double tap one of these tiles that has the movie on it. Furthermore, as a low vision user, there are various types of fonts that are used in titles. Some are you know, calligraphy practically. And there are color and other issues involved too, because maybe it's white text on a black background or vice versa, and that can cause some color issues. And there's no way to tell other than if you have a familiarity of what that title is, if it has a famous cover, what the movie is. So sighted people run into this too, where if they don't recognize what the movie is or an actor in it who's on the front cover of the picture of the movie, then they too have to double tap on it and bring up a box that tells you what it is. It's a usability issue as well. And these are the type of things that I was talking about. So I can tell that I have an instant queue, but I can't tell what's in my instant queue. And therefore, it gets into the workaround that I talked about in Serotalk 89.
And the Netflix iPhone experience is still exceedingly unpleasant as well, although in different ways. So if you are using Netflix, we urge you to contact them either through Netflix support or at Netflix Help on Twitter, and let them know that you want accessibility improvements with VoiceOver or on the web platform as well.
And we'll continue to update the story as things change, or perhaps as things do not, but hopefully things will change for the better. Our last bit of AT news is a project to create an open source Braille display. The idea is to build or present specs for building a Braille display online. Now, I'm familiar with open source software, but I'd never even thought about the concept of designing hardware open source. Joe, is this something you've ever heard of before?
In mainstream, this has happened a couple of times with designing routers or designing certain, actually there was a cell phone years ago where it was kind of all designed in an open source way. It's, you know, open source projects are interesting because it's the community all adding, but there still has to be kind of a driving force. And in the idea that it's supposed to be cheaper, there are still, of course, issues with manufacturing, of getting things tested. There's still some inherent cost in putting something together and building something that you have to take into account. Because when you make smaller runs of things, and Braille displays would be kind of sort of considered as a minor run in the great scheme of building stuff, you will have hardware costs that accelerate because you're not buying 5,000 of a thing. You may be buying 500 of a thing. And that directly affects on how much price, because you'll get a better price break if you buy 5,000 of a thing. The problem is you might not sell 5,000 of a thing. And these numbers are just numbers I'm pulling out of the air. I'm not actually saying that that's how many would be made or anything like that. But it directly right. impacts on what you can do and the budget that you have and who's taking that on. It's neat to see, though, that we've reached a point with the iPhone and other ways of connecting that we need a Braille display that is more geared and designed to go outside the Windows ecosystem. Because we see this on Twitter and stuff all the time about we're taking existing hardware and trying to pair it up with new platforms, and it's having some interesting effects. So if the community can come together and build something that's, in development terms, more robust, and by that I mean more able to take on newer platforms or work with existing ones simultaneously, that's kind of a cool thing. And the best way to do that is to get a whole bunch of opinions rather than just one company or one decision or one side, because the community knows what it really needs sometimes better than one company. And that's, you know, something that we rely on Serotalk. We rely on our community to kind of give us an idea of what it takes to get something done. Last year, in 2010, we actually did that with DocuScan Plus, where we reached out to the community and had them tell us what features mattered. So open source in our situation can help out a great deal.
Thank you. That's a great explanation, and that makes a lot of sense. Just throw in a fun little article here. More than half of Americans think we'll never go paperless. But yet 20% say yes. 24% don't know for sure. I don't really have an opinion. That came from 1,142 registered voters. I suppose the blind community probably has embraced this concept quite quickly because it's so nice to be able to do the things that we do online, from paying bills to you name it. Paperless is nice, I think.
Yeah, and I don't know that we're ever going to go completely paperless. I mean, what would happen to junk mail? We can't get rid of junk mail. I certainly think that, in all seriousness, we can be much more paperless than we currently are. I know that I have set all of my bills not to be sent to me in paper form, but rather be able to access those things online. So most of the stuff that I do get in the mail is junk mail. And of course, there are other things this applies to, for example, voting. And now there are voting machines, but I think those still generate paper ballots, don't they?
I believe they do, yes. No, I agree with you. I don't think it's ever going to, and I don't think I would want it to ever come to a place where we don't ever have hard copy backups of anything. Besides that, the shredder companies would go out of business, and we couldn't have that either.
Yeah, so, wouldn't that be sad?
Yeah, it would. In Apple news, there's going to be a January event to focus on publishing.
At least we think so.
Yeah, that's going to be very interesting to see what that has to tell us about how iBooks and the publishing industry are going to work together, and what does that mean for accessibility?
Yeah, an exact date for this hasn't been announced. And in fact, I don't think that Apple has even directly confirmed it yet, but some reliable sources are saying that this is going to happen. Nobody is expecting any sort of hardware announcements this early in the game. Apple typically waits until at least March to do that sort of thing. But as with anything in the Apple rumor mill, we shall see.
Indeed.
If you are shopping for an Apple product, there is an article that talks about why you should choose refurbished every time. And this makes sense. Refurbished is one of those things that can mean different things depending on which company or product you're buying. And in Apple's case, it basically means that you're going to get an all-new outside, so an all-new case for whatever device this is, and it's going to be well-tested. The only thing that you won't get is the pretty Apple product packaging, which perhaps you can live without. And in some cases, the discounts for an Apple refurbished product are pretty significant. For an iPad 2, for example, the typical price for a 16-gig iPad is $499, and you could get that refurbished for a good $80 off that price. And when you're looking at MacBook Airs, the discounts are even more significant.
Our own Mr. Mike Calvo is a big fan of refurbished, and I believe he even said that during our MacBook Air reviews. Mike is always a big fan of being able to find a good deal, and has always, you know, talked about refurbished is not a bad thing. It still comes with a warranty, and you still have the ability to say things like square trade and other opportunities. So for somebody who used to work in retail, there's a difference between going, say, after Christmas and New Year's and going to the return pile and the refurbished pile. The return pile could be something that just was, I didn't like it, so we went back and retaped the box and just shoved it back out there. Whereas refurbished means that it's been, you know, repaired or looked at. And again, those terms kind of change depending on the manufacturer. But if you look at some of the things like the Sony store at an outlet mall, a lot of that stuff is refurb. And so you want to look into return versus refurb and do a little digging, but you may find some gems out there at a much cheaper price than if you had gone and bought it straight new.
In general tech, should we just start calling this the RIM Death Watch segment?
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
Pretty much.
RIM has lost it. Company shareholders are calling for a company breakup or sell-off. That is really painful. It looks like the CEOs are on their way out as well.
Alas, poor Rim, we knew you well, for 5 years ago you ruled the mobile world, and now you have shuffled off your mortal coil.
Now you have gone thither to your mortal reward.
We talked about this a little bit on This Year in AT. BlackBerry was synonymous. As little as 3 years ago, we were still talking about, what was it, Horatio or whatever
Horatio,
it was
from. Horatio.
Horatio, Orator. That was Orator. That's how long
ago
it's been.
Right, but then it changed its name.
Right, yeah. And so we had, that conversation, and now that seems kind of moot because BlackBerry itself is starting to fade off into the sunset. This is why Jamie talked a little bit last night about not staying in one platform and putting your eggs in one basket. It's important that we keep an eye on this, the Kindle, and all forms of electronic media for being able to have access to them, because we don't know with today's society that things won't just totally flip in a span of 5 years. So as much as it's a story of, well, the BlackBerry wasn't very accessible anyway, so who cares? Yeah, 5 years ago, this was a story. It was big. It was huge in enterprise, because how did you go to work for a major company and be a manager if you couldn't access your BlackBerry? So it directly impacted vocation and what we wanted to do as blind individuals. Not that I'm upset to see BlackBerry go, mind you. That's okay. But it does say once again that, and I say this often when I'm doing offline presentations, there was an old commercial called "We're Not Your Father's Oldsmobile." As much as Apple is excited today and is wonderful for us and doing amazing thing for us, the Sony Walkman was the music player of its time. And even Apple has turned those icons from iPod to just music, because at some point they realize they're going to have fade off standalone MP3 players. This too shall pass, and we just need to be aware that these things happen in technology and keep things on the forefront. But in the meantime, send your roses and condolence cards to Research in Motion at
That's
the address
right.
listed in the show notes.
Yeah.
And of course, the question now is, what is going to happen to the things that made RIM great? RIM had a number of very important features for enterprise, and people are theorizing that just because the company itself may go away, be disbanded, who knows what's going to happen to it, those features that they built shouldn't go to waste, and they're probably going to go somewhere. So are they going to come to another smartphone platform, and if so, which one?
And just like other technologies, it will take a while, because BlackBerry's just now starting to catch on in, say, Africa or the Middle East, because the iPhone hasn't gotten its way over to it yet, or Google Android hasn't worked its way as pervasively. So this won't go away tomorrow unless the company decides to sell off all of its, assets and stuff and pulls a Nokia or something like what Nokia is rumored to be doing, because now there's a rumor that Microsoft may just buy Nokia. Or like what Google has done when they bought Motorola, there's still some conversations about what happens to Motorola phones. This kind of thing is going to change, but it won't go away, because there are still lots of people using Symbian out there. And we consider Symbian here in the U.S. a non-starter. But for the U.K., as Steve Nutt likes to remind us a lot, Symbian is very popular, and very popular in Europe. And that's what we have to remind ourselves is, it doesn't necessarily affect us sitting here in the United States, but there are a lot of people still looking at Nokia Access because those are the phones that are pervasive in their areas.
Another company that's taken a hit recently is GoDaddy. There's a bill making its way through Congress called SOPA, Stop Online Piracy Act. And this is the idea that the government could target an offshore peer-to-peer site, sharing files illegally, and basically just wipe it off the map as far as the internet is concerned. Just stop all traffic from it. There are some real concerns about that, because how far does this go? If one person puts something up on YouTube that shouldn't be there, then does that mean that YouTube just goes away? Does the government have a right to just shut it down? And so there's a real uproar and a real concern over this bill. And GoDaddy came out in support of it, and many of its customers began to transfer their domains elsewhere in the thousands, as a matter of fact.
People were leaving in droves.
Enough so that that GoDaddy reversed its decision and decided maybe it would rethink this policy a little bit and not support this bill. But apparently, a lot of people were still really, you know, down on GoDaddy and not cutting them a break at all. We have an op-ed piece that says, you know what, it's time to give GoDaddy a break. They made a decision. People disagreed with it. They voted with their wallets. GoDaddy changed its position. So let's cut them some slack.
There's really nothing else they can do at this point. You know, they've all they already came out in support of SOPA. They can't go back and change that. They reversed their decision, and people are saying, well, they just did that because their business was dying. Yes, perhaps. But once they've done that, what else are they going to do for you? Should they have the CEO come to each person's home personally and apologize for having a differing viewpoint? I am certainly not a supporter of SOPA in its current form, but at this point, again, there's not much that GoDaddy can do beyond what it has done already.
I hear Quixter is available. They could open up a Twitter account. And... Now, there's no simple way to break down what SOPA is in this podcast. We encourage you to learn more about it and read this article and read the links that it also crosses off to if you're interested in that, because it's a very messy conversation to have about what the internet is to you, what the internet is to the law, and what the internet is to people who want to use the law to make the internet better for them. There's even conversations about Hollywood and how far we've gone to protecting Hollywood and media and intellectual property and all that. So again, we're not going to go too far into this, but there are resources out there. And I also point you to Tech News Today, which has been doing a great job over at twit.tv, that's TWIT.TV, that can give you some more information about SOPA. It's a very chilling conversation to have. Do we keep the internet open and available, or do we start to do what other countries are starting to do, which is put up keep out signs or keep off the grass signs and control what information can be pulled in or out of the internet? And it's going to be a little bit before this is going to come back into Congress, because they wisely decided not to vote on it before Christmas. But it will come back up, and it's probably going to be a big story in 2012 how we move forward with this. But it definitely has ramifications on access, as well as does it create a dark net for those of you who read things like Demon from Daniel Suarez, where people just find ways around it. Because the general idea about the way a hacker looks at it is information wants to be free. No matter how many things you put out there, people will find a way to get around all these roadblocks and still get the information, because the information itself wants to make it to you. So again, not going too far down this path, but read this so you at least know what SOPA, SOPA is, and you can learn more about it.
As someone who is looking to get a new computer this year, I'm not sure whether I'm going to start with a laptop or a desktop. I actually need both, but we'll see. I am still an XP user, not necessarily because I want to be. It's just what I'm using right now. But apparently, I'm in pretty good company. XP is still the top OS, but Windows 7 is hot on its trail. I was a little surprised when I read this article. I really didn't expect XP to still be ahead.
I didn't either.
We've talked about this a couple of different times. Why do you think it's taken so long for Windows 7 to gain traction?
It's hard to say. Perhaps part of it is people, you know, they saw the disaster, which was Vista, and, you know, Vista still has very poor showing, and with good reason, I think. And maybe another part of it is that people are not interested in change, be that a consumer or perhaps more often an enterprise, you know, an organization. They say, we've got XP installed on all these machines. All of our workers are trained to use XP. We have all the policies in place and blah, blah, blah. And it's going to take something major to get us to move away from that. And I feel like that's the reason why they're, you know, XP is still having such a good showing. But Microsoft is actually saying to these companies, if you're holding off for Windows 8 before you upgrade, don't do that. Just go ahead and upgrade now to Windows 7 and then go to Windows 8.
Interesting. Coming up after the break, your email right here on the Serotalk podcast.
My name is Tom Thornton.
And my name is Cindy Thornton. We've been married 38 years. We're retired, and this is how we live united.
We play golf and we travel, but we also decided we were going to give to and volunteer with United Way at our community free health clinic.
I do the nursing at the clinic.
I work the front office, checking in patients, greeting them, making them feel comfortable.
United Way is how we contribute, because we know our time and money are going to the right places, the places that need it most and implement it best.
Judging by the thank yous we get at the clinic, I'd say we're doing the right thing with our retirement, too.
We even get a few bless yous. It's incredible.
We're Tom and Cindy Thornton. We volunteer at our community free health clinic, so we don't just wear the shirt.
We live it.
Give. Advocate. Volunteer. Live United. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
We have a lot of listener feedback this week. In fact, we have so much that we are actually not going to be able to cover all of it right now. We're going to keep some of it. We had a question about some Bluetooth devices, and Mike Calvo is actually going to do a review probably for the next podcast on some Bluetooth options, both for devices that accept Bluetooth and even maybe how to turn some devices like a Victor Reader Stream into devices that you can use Bluetooth with. So stick around for that. That should be a lot of fun and some really good information coming up in the next week or so. Keith Hinton writes and he asks why we have to wait for Google to update accessibility if Android is open source. Joe, what's a nice short answer to that one?
Okay, I've got an hour.
Not quite.
Oh, okay.
Minus about 59 minutes and 30 seconds.
Exactly.
We're going to cover this a little bit in That Android Show 5. We're actually going to bring Steve Nutt on to talk about some beauty of Ice Cream Sandwich and the accessibility of what it is. But a lot of what happens with Android is fragmentation. The carriers need to sell you cell phones. And it doesn't really matter to them whether you get the new version of Android or not, because they need to sell you cell phones. And one of the ways to get you to buy a new cell phone or re-upping your contract is to kind of limit you from being able to get the latest, greatest version of Android. Or hardware has gotten in the way. So the hardware that was super cool 18 months ago can't support the software that's available 18 months later. And that actually happened while we were on Christmas break, where Samsung had a phone that was maybe about 14 months old where they said, you know, we can't load our version of the home screen and Ice Cream Sandwich. It's going to have to be one or the other because the hardware doesn't allow it. And you're thinking like, wow, that's like a phone that's only a year old. How is that possible? It's because it's changing that rapidly in cell phones. And how do you get that across? There was an article that we posted in the Twitter feed for That Android Show that the new version of Android, Ice Cream Sandwich, is only on 0.96% of phones that are available to the buying public. And it bears repeating that Ice Cream Sandwich has some amazing accessibility issues, but a lot of people might not be able to get to that until they're able to get a newer phone or willing to purchase out a contract. That's no different than the iPhone. There's a lot of people who really lamented that they couldn't get Siri in iPhone 4S because they were already deep into their contract on iPhone 4, or a lot of people jumped from the 3GS over to iPhone 4S. So this is also common on Apple where you have to make a decision. And those people who just upgraded to the iPhone 4S will have the same head-scratching moments when iPhone 5 eventually comes out this time, say in 6 months or who knows whenever Apple wants to release. But you have to decide whether you want to keep up with the Joneses. And it's a shame that accessibility is worked into that. But yes, even though Apple goes in the same direction of trying to sell you hardware and Android is open source, there's just a finite limit. And the way the industry looks is they don't want you to have a phone in your hand for 5 to 6 years. That doesn't make them any money. So we're tied to accessibility features being in upgrades for a number of reasons. And that's me in the 1.5 minute, maybe 2 minute version.
I think that was about four.
Actually, it was 2 minutes and 34 seconds after editing, in case you were wondering.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I've lost track of time as usual. But we're going to go into that more into both Triple Click Home and that Android show, because this is a conversation that we can't encapsulate very quickly. But if you also follow us on Twitter, we have links to stories that do. So remember to head over to the show notes to pick up some of the information about this, but also follow our other shows. And even if you don't follow Twitter, you can go to the website where our Twitter feeds are and just browse those links. So if you're not using Twitter or one of the variants, or you're a Facebook fan, you can still follow along on Twitter with some of our stories without having to sign up to Twitter. So I want to make sure, we had a question about that over the break too, of how do I get to some of these stories and some of these extra things. If you want to keep the Serotalk experience going and you want to, you know, stay up to date on the news that we're actually getting for these podcasts, you can follow us on Twitter at Serotalk or at That Android Show or at Triple Click Home to be able to get some of the stories that we're talking about or get more in depth on what we're talking about. Because we also had a question about, can you stop and explain what some of these things are? We apologize that we get a little inside baseball-y and we use a lot of technical terms on the podcast at times, because we're kind of reading this all the time and we have a weird time of trying to decide what should be explained and what shouldn't be explained, because there are also people who listen to this podcast who would get kind of annoyed at us if we stopped and explained what some things that they would consider basic is. So just so you know, there are information out there in the show notes that helps explain this.
Aaron Linson writes to say that OneNote for the iPad is accessible and works great. So thank you, Aaron, for that feedback.
Good to know. Appreciate that.
Beth asks Joe if we should be concerned about security on cell phones while talking. Can people listen in on cell phones? Also, do we need to have antivirus software on our Android or iOS phones?
Ricky, start the clock. Another 4 minutes. No, I'm kidding. You know, yes and no. Again, there are law at play and it changes from state to state. There's a lot about, you know, whether somebody can listen in or not. As far as just going out there and say using like an old police scanner type way of, you know, looking for cell phones on cell towers, no, most of that stuff is encrypted and you should feel pretty comfortable about that in a very minor way. I can't go too far deeper. Pete Bosley would be a great person to drag in to talk about this because he has a lot of info about how these kinds of things work. But again, it's no different than a landline. You know, should I worry if I use these things called public telephones? You know, there are fewer and far of those than there used to be. But no, I don't think that's something you should concern yourself with. Now, the AV on a cell phone is something that's talked about a lot last year because these are computers. You know, these aren't phones in the traditional sense of being stuck on a wire that we pick up and push buttons on. These are little computers. And computers have viruses and antivirus, and should that be something we're concerned about? I think the jury's still out on that. I think it is entirely possible. You know, you're connected to the internet, so therefore you can get to these devices. But I don't know that we've hit the point yet where that's a concern. And it would also be different on whether you're using an iPhone or an Android or what have you, because each one has their own security features to take into effect. And we also have to deal with the hysteria of AV makers like Norton and others need to sell you antivirus. So is there also a perception there to get you to start thinking about buying antivirus because these guys need to sell you antivirus software? That also will probably work its way out as we go forward. But this happens
ding, ding,
with
ding.
Any technology.
Time this, is up.
That's good. This happens with any technology. And you know, this is what happens as technology grows. So for the moment, it's okay. Just everything's fine. And I didn't mean to incite anybody to worry. I think we're good.
2 minutes, 7 seconds.
Thank you. Excellent. In our roundabout segment this week, we have 5 predictions for 2012 in mobile devices. And the first one, RIM gets taken out. Wow.
Yeah, I don't think that's a prediction so much as just
an inevitability.
Yes.
Yeah. Second one, LTE goes mainstream. We'll have to see. I mean, I think that probably makes sense. It's definitely going to be on the rise. So we'll have to see how that pans out. Windows Phone breaks through. If that happens, I certainly hope that there are some accessibility changes. It'll be interesting to see how Windows 8 accessibility, if that moves over to the Windows Phone platform as well. Google launches a legal counterstrike against Apple. Well, again, we'll have to wait and see, I suppose. Non-iPad tablets see more love. You know, I don't really have a thought on that one so much. I suspect that another one of those, we've certainly plugged it a lot this week, but that's okay. That Android show certainly will probably have a lot to say about that, as well as, you know, we can talk about that on Serotalk as well as it comes up, but we'll have to
And this year in AT, the number one story was the inaccessibility of the Amazon Kindle Fire, and that thing sold over 4 million units over the Christmas break and is accelerating. So that may be a story that we do see coming up in 2012 is do these, you know, other units that are not iPads, as I call them, you know, catch fire? And if they're inaccessible, does that become an issue? Say if a school decides, well, you know what? We reached a deal with textbooks and Amazon, and all our students get Kindle Fires.
Oops.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's already happening. Well, not in quite that way, but a school system was going to switch to using the Nook exclusively in class, and a lawsuit is being brought against them for inaccessibility. But
and that given may just that, be what it takes.
Yeah. But I think that given that ice cream sandwich is going to become more popular on tablets, and it's the first Android OS that kind of tried to bring the phone and tablet experience into some sort of commonality, I guess, these tablets that will just happen to be a bit more accessible because of the new features in ice cream sandwich, it's going to be a good thing, you know, if Android begins gaining in popularity on tablets, at least if they're using ice cream sandwich.
The strange thing there is that we have the screen reader debate where some people are used to controls of a screen reader and they want whatever other screen reader they touch next to have the same control scheme of the one that they've learned. And what I mean by that is people have grown accustomed to the way that Apple is doing accessibility. And every other touchscreen needs to act like the way that Apple does it. So you're now in a situation where if you come up with a different mousetrap, you may have people not accept it because it's not like what they know, or they might not want to learn it because they become comfortable with the iPhone. That's a danger there too, going into 2012, is if there are alternatives, will people accept it, or will they try to stuff a square peg in a round hole because it's not like the blank, or it's not like the screen reader I use. Not that we've ever heard that conversation before. Yeah. So it gets back to what Jamie again talked about in having all your eggs in one basket. But you also have to have a commonality. If we didn't have Windows 95 or DOS, how would we teach each other? Because there isn't anybody else to teach us accessibility or other things like that, but our friends in some cases. And it's great that we now have the same debate in mobiles where, you know, I love this because it acts like this, but there are defects in how that works. And maybe it can't be done in the exact same way. Or are patents getting in the way? Because Apple does have some patents on touch and things. That means that you can never do it the way that Apple does it, because you legally can't do what Apple is doing with the interface. Therefore, this platform will never be like the iPhone. That's going to be an interesting thing going forward.
It is. A prosthetic eye may help blind people see. It sends images directly to the brain. It could be ready in less than a decade. And this really seems to be targeted at people who have a damaged retina. It's been tested on mice so far. It's based on studies of how the brain uses electrical patterns when people do see and hear and reach for things, that sort of thing. So it'll be interesting. You know, it's kind of one of those stay tuned situations. Researchers are always stretching, looking out there in the future, seeing what can be done.
It certainly sounds more comfortable than wearing a Kinect camera on your head.
Interesting that you'd mention that, Joe. You have something to say about Connect, correct?
We've talked about Connect a lot over the last year on the podcast and putting one on your head or carrying it with you. My family thought it was funny enough that they would go ahead and buy a Connect for me for my Xbox for Christmas. And I want to do a segment so you guys can hear what the voice control is like and how that interacts. And if you have no sight or very little sight, can you use the Connect effectively? And there's some surprising things with that because, of course, it's not Siri, and that's going to be one of those comparison moments. But the unit itself is kind of larger than I had thought. I was talking about this with Buddy Brannon, who's on Triple Click Home, and we both kind of thought, well, you know, maybe it's smaller, but it is about as wide as a book as far as from top to bottom, vertical. Yeah. So if you had a old textbook, say like a history book, it's about as wide as that. And it is bulky in the sense that it's not very tall because it's about as a little thinner than a phone book. But I don't know if I would wear something that is, it is like less than a pound-ish kind of the way, but it isn't something that I would necessarily feel comfortable because it would go past my ears. It'd be like wearing one very wide hat. And it has trouble with darkness. So if you have a dimly lit room, the Kinect may not see you. And now that I'm getting to play with one, I'm seeing the limitations in the hardware of, you know, can it see your hands? Can it see your feet? And, you know, these will be refined. There's even rumors about a Kinect 2 that's coming with possibly the next Xbox, which may be announced this year that improves the technology. But in this first gen one, it's neat that it can scan your body because it kind of gives you a skeletal look of seeing where your body is. But those dots do tend to disappear at times. So it's like, what? You don't have feet anymore. So we've seen all these things and all that, but it's not heavy. It's just really bulky. So I don't know if I would want to wear one.
Interesting. In our final segment, wearable robots help paralyzed warriors walk again. That's a little bit of a tongue twister.
Yeah, it
this is. This is an article that talks about a man-style exoskeleton. So four motors are going to replicate the hips and the knees. And according to the article, it's as easy as wearing a pair of jeans. Well, I suspect it's not quite as easy, but you know what? It may be worth the effort. It's available for trial. It should be within the next 6 months. The cost is $150,000. And again, it's one of those things we talked about. I kind of went on my rant here a couple podcasts back when we talked about the wheelchair that was being discontinued and the maintenance contract was going to end. So we give our warriors and other, you know, people with disabilities some freedom that they haven't had, that they wouldn't be able to have, and then we take it away from them. So if we're going to commit to this thing, to this exoskeleton, if it really works, then I certainly hope that the money is there and the funding is there to continue the work.
Agreed. This came out of work done in the military such that soldiers could carry much heavier loads or hike over rough terrain in an easier way. So that sort of work then turned into, hey, this could be used elsewhere. And it's good to see that happening. But as Jamie said, I do hope it continues and not get to a certain point and then they say, well, we're moving on now. Hope you enjoyed walking for a little bit.
Yeah.
I think we're just maybe three more steps away from four or five of these all coming together to form a giant robot that will take over the world.
See, that could happen.
That's the plan.
That's Joe's prediction for 2012.
That's it.
Skynet.
Exoskeletons can merge and then become Voltron. No, wait. No, that's end of line. I went too far. No, this is super cool, though, is that it's giving people the ability just to sit on their own. It's assisting in allowing somebody to, you know, rise from a chair, which for a lot of people, that can be a big issue. And, you know, like the space program, we started with trying to go to the moon, but we also got Velcro and microwaves out of it. So these kinds of things can actually have spinoff technologies that can help more than who would they intended. Same as the driverless car. With Google and what NFB is doing, it starts off being one thing, but so many other technologies can spin off out of it. And that's what's really cool. So if we could get that, we may never have to hear those commercials of help, I've fallen and I cannot get up again.
That's right.
Well, that's going to put a wrap on this week's podcast. I'd like to thank you all for listening. Go over to serotalk.com and check out the show notes. Certainly send us an email, resources@serotalk.com. Go to Twitter, twitter.com/serotalk, and either just browse the Twitter feed, as Joe suggested, or go ahead and subscribe and follow our Twitter feed. You can send us an iReport on iBlink Radio. And at the end of the show, Patrick will give you our phone number as well, and you can certainly call our comment line. Go over to iTunes. You can subscribe to our podcast there. And if you do that, be sure and rate us in the iTunes store. We would really appreciate that. So until next time, have a great week, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
Happy New Year.
You've been listening to Serotalk. Visit us at www.serotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@serotalk.com. Send us an iReport with iBlink Radio, available in the Apple App Store and the Android Market. Or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us next week as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life. Thank you.